Welcome to the WP Tonic This Week in WordPress and SaaS podcast, where Jonathan Denwood interviews the leading experts in WordPress, e-learning, and online marketing to help WordPress professionals launch their own SaaS.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic This Week in WordPress and SaaS. We've got a great guest here. We've got Balder Jarnason. I'm totally butchered his name, but he's used to it, and I've done a superb job of that, Tribe. But you're used to that. We're going to be talking about all things WordPress. Is WordPress really an open source project? What is an open source project? We're going to be delving into this fascinating subject, and Balder has a lot of experience in open source projects and WordPress itself. I've also got my co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, sure. My name is Kurt von Annen. I own a company called Mañana No Más. We focus largely on membership and learning websites, and I work directly with the folks at WP Tonic and the great folks at Lifter LMS.
And we've got Balder. Would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the Triath?
I would like to. The problem with being old and middle-aged is that introductions, if they were supposed to be faithful, would take forever. The short version is that I've been doing this forever, since probably the first website made in, I think, 96 or 97. So it's getting there. But in terms of the open source and WordPress experience, I'm currently a consultant and freelancer, but before I switched over to that, I was working for open education not-for-profit organizations and working quite a bit with, for example, outfits like Pressbooks, which uses WordPress heavily in a open education context. For the past few years, like, most of my work has been in the sort of either open education or open source sectors. But post-COVID, with many things changed a bit. I'm working more in a freelance capacity as people need.
You have been a long-term contributor to the core of WordPress and...
Not to the core WordPress. I've a long-term user sort of been working adjacent with people who have contributed to... I'm the guy who helps out people who do that work.
Roger.
For example, with doing the Pressbooks thing is that... even though I wasn't actually working on the core Pressbook project, most of my, quite a few of my responsibilities involved making things possible for them in terms of integrations with other projects. Quite a bit of API work, plugins, and that sort of thing. Currently, most of my WordPress work is in the sort of on the plugin side. I'm currently working on a project with a UK-based company for integrating their API into WordPress websites. And the simplest way to do that is using plugins. So it's a bit eclectic and it's a bit mixed.
You got a fair bit of experience, so. Should be a great discussion. Before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great interview, I've got a couple of messages from our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
Coming back, folks, want to point out we've got a great list of the best WordPress plugins, plus some special offers from the sponsors. Plus, you can sign up for the WP Tonic newsletter, a weekly newsletter of the best WordPress stories and tech stories. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. And you can get all the goodies there, my WordPress tribe. What more could you ask for? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. Sorry to disappoint. I've made a career of it. So let's go straight in. So what do you see as some of the critical elements of a true open source project? Is it totally just based on the license that software is being built on, or is there more elements to a true open source project, in your opinion, Aldous?
there has to be more to it than the license. It's so easy to create a software project that technically follows the license to a letter, but breaks every spirit of it. And specifically, one of the risks with open source projects is that they become effectively proprietary code that nobody else is able to modify in any way in a meaningful way, because there's so many external factors, whether it's organizational, financial, or just in terms of comprehending the code, that prevents other people from contributing it. And honestly, I think that's one of the concerns that people like me who come from, have been quite involved with open source and open education. The concern with WordPress is that it's effectively turning into a sort of a shared source company more than a true open source one. That it'll be something that's entirely driven by WordPress.com and the Gutenberg development team specifically, and that everybody else will find it harder and harder to influence the strategic and overall direction of the project. You might be able to fix individual issues, and if you're making a theme or a plugin, you might be able to tweak and fix specific bugs that affect those projects, but in terms of affecting the overall direction, what is WordPress and where is it going and who's it for? If it hasn't already, then in the long term, this I think it's going to be dominated entirely by WordPress.com and the Gutenberg team, and specifically by Matt himself. It's always been an issue with open source, or the whole benevolent dictator for life. the idea that there's a single tyrant or benevolent dictator that directs the path of the project, that you could turn tyrant or they could switch to a more democratic way of working. But Matt has always in the past, he and
can I interrupt? I'm not being rude, but I think we need to lay out some bigger elements before we go into the way Matt runs things or
does. Yeah.
You said the spirit of open source, that if something technically meets the requirements of the license, it can still be judged as not being truly open source because it's not adhering to the spirit. What is this spirit part of the equation that you would utilize to judge a truly open source project? I think I wasn't being rude in interrupting you, but I just felt that we need to clarify what the reasonably quickly, maybe 2 to 3 key points around this term of spirit that you utilized at the beginning.
That's absolutely a very good question. And the core one, the absolute, you know, prime one would be community participation in the direction of the project, both the development and the direction. As in, it's not dictated by a single company or even a small group of company, but that it's inclusive of people in the community as well. And that includes both users and people who have built their livelihoods around it. So community is a big thing, and that's one of the what has always been the strength of WordPress. It's got massive community. And that's what took WordPress global more than anything else. That is at the heart of the issue is the fact that it has to come from a plurality of people rather than a single company or organization, because people within a company are replaceable. They're human resources that are just swapped out. But community is more often is a more organic thing that forms around a project, and that's what defines open source is the community. Or to be specific, if you want to go for the whole the hippie free software definition, that's what defines free software versus open source, because the term open source was originally coined specifically to define a path to just get the...
I need to interrupt again before I throw over it to Kurt, is... I totally understand what you've just said, but the problem in my mind, and it's not, I'm not basing this as a criticism of what you've just said, because much of what you've just stated, I totally agree with. But that my only problem is, if you just say it's community, that's a bit, to my heart, it's a little bit vague, isn't it, still saying it's based on community, because one person's concept of what community is can be totally different to another person's idea of what community is.
Yeah. So do you want me to give examples?
Well, that would be helpful, because, you know, this is tricky, but I do know there's been a number. This is not, I don't know if you would agree with this. This tricky situation isn't just specifically for WordPress. There's been a number of high visible open source projects that have had to deal with this subject, and some have dealt with it by collapsing, others have overcome and moved on. It's very diverse about how open source projects deal with this. But my research on it seems to suggest that it's not that uncommon. So first of all, what's your thought on that? And then maybe you can give a quick example.
So one of the issues is, if we want to be specific in our terminology, there are several different kinds of open source. The first kind would be the one that is essentially open source by sort of commercial or distribution deed, like MongoDB. It's maintained by a single company. It's effectively just using open source as a to reach their customers and for as a marketing thing. It's whether they switch away from a technical open source license or not is probably irrelevant to them, because they aren't really using open source as in terms of what, like, either the Free Software Foundation or the Open Source Consortium intended, which is that they have specific goals. One is to use the crowd or a plurality of higher visibility into code to improve code quality, the bazaar model, which is what was a goal with Open Source Consortium. And the Free Software Consortium, Free Software Foundation, their goal is about establishing freedoms for the users. So when you're using just for purely for as a commercial endeavor, as a, you don't really need either one of those things. You could use just a shared source license to do them. That's what's happening, is that a lot of the companies are switching to basically licensing that more reflects like the old way that Unix, like the before Linux, before BSD used to be distributed. It used to be distributed as source code because it was like a given that you'd need the source code to be able to properly deploy the software in your environment. So it's a purely functional thing. We're getting a lot of companies that started off as a broader open source or free software companies are switching to the sort of shared source model that's closed in spirit, but open in terms of that you can actually read the code, because as response to the cloud hosting issue where things like Amazon Web Services can basically take your code and provide their own services without paying you anything. So these companies were implementing a lot of work and code without getting paid for it from their perspective. And if your motivation is purely commercial, then obviously that means that the open source or free software is not doing the job for you. So they switch. It's a logical thing from their perspective. There's a second type of open source project, which is similar to like Ruby on Rails. Wow. Ruby on Rails exists as a external, like a positive externality, in the ways what economists call it, as in they made this to build their own products, but they make it open source because that both spreads those ideas for how to make software. It opens up that code to more eyeballs, but it's not required for their core product. It's like they benefit from it, but it's they could close it off if they wanted to without actually impacting their own product. It's community participation without, but the community doesn't really direct the project because that's kind of one of the controversies with Ruby on Rails, is that the Rails core and specifically Basecamp tend to make decisions unilaterally that affect all of the people who are using the project. So it's not community directed. But then the third sort of example, which is what I would have classified WordPress traditionally, which is that it's made by and for the community. So the WordPress community has quite often in the past had a big influence in where things were going. They when WordPress.com tried to with the initial release in Gutenberg, the pushback in terms of accessibility there is not something that would have happened with a project that was more directed by the single core company. The fact that that happened, the fact that that had an effect and resulted in extensive work over sort of since then to try and improve the accessibility was evidence that WordPress was, at least at that time, a community-directed project. So that those would be the three different kinds, which is that essentially entirely commercial, partially commercial, but benefits the community. And the third one is that it's primarily community, but benefits the commercial companies involved.
Thank you so much. I think that was really very helpful. I want to throw it over to Kurt now and move it on to the next question, because we only got a limited amount of time. You have to come back. I know.
Sorry.
You know, no, it's, these are not simple concepts, are they?
No. The more I have these conversations about open source, especially with these other pros that Jonathan introduces through the show, the more confused I get about open source, just to be honest with everybody that's listening. When I hear of like the community running the show, I immediately have flashbacks to like custom themes with all kinds of weird functions and lockouts and the classic editor baked in, and a customer comes to me and this thing's a mess. And I think to myself, well, a theme should be appearance and a plugin should be function. And that's the way that my head works. And when community gets to run with the ball freely, I think sometimes things get weird. But beyond all that, if we go to the next question and I say open source, making open source, then having it last 20 years and then some, what do you think of these biggest challenges when we look at things like legacy code and making sure that everything works forever?
Yeah, I mean, you could literally like talk about, like write the entire doctorate theses on these, and people literally do that. It's like you if you there are, you can go on archive.org and there's going to be papers and essays there on this topic. It's not, there's no, they haven't found a single answer. But I mean, the problem, like in terms of like WordPress specifically, is that it was idiosyncratic to begin with. Like WordPress, the way it handles quite a few things has never been exactly normal. It's like not been entirely mainstream PHP and MySQL handling. It's always been, I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's always been a little bit different. And that makes things complicated, like uniquely complicated for WordPress. And it's a complicated problem to begin with. And then you have the issue on with web projects where there is this massive changes in the web browser as a platform itself that itself has added huge capabilities where things that took you hundreds of lines of code to do something in the front end now might be a single line of CSS. So it's also a question of where do you draw the line, like how far back do you want to support, and also how far into the future, and you might discover that you can't do both at the same time. If you're going to like update a code base for the long term, you might have to leave people behind. And people don't like being left behind. they really, yeah. So unfortunately, there's no easy answer to that, unfortunately.
Well, because my observation is very tricky. There's been other CRMs, other open source projects that have handled this tricky not very well, and it's outside observation, it's damaged the project. But on the other hand, being a total slave to backward compatibility, I think it has its own drawbacks and problems with that, with being able to really concentrate on moving a project forward in utilizing the most modern technology and just just the technical baggage of trying to keep backward compatibility, it makes a complicated project even more complicated. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's two good examples from the closed source world, Windows versus Backers. Windows loves supporting everything that has ever touched the Windows platform from the beginning of time. It's a absolutely mind-boggling achievement that they still have the level of backwards compatibility that they do. macOS breaks everything, not quite everything, but they keep breaking things and updates because they don't care. They're like, whatever. Like if you're not old software that gets broken, old laptops, like my mother tried to update an old MacBook Air the other day and she didn't manage to reach me in time before doing it because I would have told her not to. But it's dead in the water now, so I need to figure out a way to resurrect it. But those are the two biggest examples of those two different approaches that are in our current computing. And depending on your goals, either one is equally valid. But I think we can agree that both have massive downsides and seem to add... the biggest difference between the two is who ends up doing the work. On the macOS, the integrators, the third-party app developers, and...
Well, he didn't pay for it. Oh, he's back again. He's coming back, folks. He said some stuff. Oh, you're coming back. You cut off completely there. I'm going to have to bring you back into the... There you go. He's got cut off completely there.
Where did I end?
You were talking about Mac and how they moved the technical overhead to the third-party people.
Yeah, so the difference between the two approaches is basically who ends up doing the work. On the macOS, it's the third-party software developers, it's the users, it's the anybody who's tried to extend the system on Windows. They've taken on a lot of that work themselves, and a lot of the work ends up being like on Microsoft or on drivers developers. And I think the same thing could be applied, for example, to WordPress and other open source projects, is that do you want to preserve the work of all of your extension plugin developers, all of your ecosystem? Do you want to shift the work over to them? Or do you want to take it on yourself? But if the core project is going to take it on, they need the money. They need resources.
When it comes to the WordPress, my observation is you've got a situation where it's the worst of both worlds because a lot of the overhead is on the third parties, yet it still wants total compatibility to the back. So that's my quick observation with that. I just want to comment before we go for our break. Would you say that going back to your three examples of what an open source project can be, I'm sure there's a host of other different flavors, but the three that you outlined, I thought you did an excellent job. Would you agree with me that WordPress, it's only my own observation, that it has attempted to move from example three to example two, which was the Ruby Rails example. There's been a real attempt to really move it to that Ruby on Rails example. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think that's actually core part of a lot of the controversies and the tension that exists among that at least I've witnessed and heard from in the WordPress community is there at least there's the feeling among some users and developers that this is the case. Of course, it's impossible to know whether that's the actual strategy or direction because, you know, we can't read the minds of the people involved. But it's certainly what it looks like from the outside to a lot of people. And I kind of think it's the responsibilities on like the people who are directing the WordPress project today to clarify what's going on and to make sure that everybody understands what is the project trying to become. And because it's like, as soon as you just say outright, well, if you want to change something and as soon as you tell people about it, then that makes a lot of the things quite a bit easier and less ambiguous.
I totally agree with you. I know we need to go for a break, but I just want to add this other reflection and see if you agree with it. It's probably driven by business, but could it also be driven that you had a base of developers that were used to using PHP, but the technical change, you're also going through a major technical change that's understandable in some ways to utilizing modern JavaScript and JavaScript libraries like React. And that had a consequence as well. Can you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it had a role to play somewhere in the decision making. It's extremely hard, though, from the outside to kind of like guess just how much of a role. But I'm sure it was there as an item on the meeting, if there was a meeting. So probably at least in part.
So the technology drove partially a decision because the bulk of your contributors haven't got the technical or the experience in a particular new road, a new pathway. So you're going to look at more internal resources to supply the technical base, but you don't want to lose the feeling of community. So you want both things at the same time, and that's why it becomes a bit of a hot mess, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's an entirely plausible theory about how things stand. It could be.
We've delved into some deep subjects. I think we've done a reasonable stop. It's been to the quality that I thought it was going to be, the conversation. I don't think you would hear this kind of conversation on a lot of podcasts. We've got a great second half. We're going to go for our break. We've got a couple more quick messages from our sponsors that are really appreciated. We'll be back in a few moments, folks.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. I want to point out, if you're looking at a great hosting partner, especially in the learning management, membership and Buddy Boss area, why don't you look at becoming a WP Tonic partner? We've got some fantastic packages for you, the WordPress professional. You can learn all about our great packages and how we support you by going over to wp-tonic.com/partners, wp-tonic.com/partners, and find out. We love to be your technical partner in these type of projects. So, on we go. I'm going to throw it over to Kirk. Over to you again, Kirk.
Well, this question kind of hits me because I think as an agency, when I deal with a client, I prefer to have a single point of contact. If I'm an agency and I'm signing into a multi-person Zoom call to get six opinions before I change the heading or the image on the homepage, I've got a nightmare on my hands. And I think about WordPress and the 43% of the internet that it is, and the huge community and mass that it must be. And then I think about the most vocal people at the top of the community and some of the unhinged things I see on X and things like that that they post. And so I come to this question kind of lightly, but in all seriousness, how effectively can an open source project actually be managed by a committee? Who picks that committee? And is this a real problem, or is this just hyperbole that gets blown out of shape?
I mean, it's a real problem because it is. It's like anybody who's attempted to, like, I did quite a bit of work, like being a representative of a not-for-profit at the W3C, working on standardization, and which is probably the definition of committee work. And it is, politeness prevents me from using the language that is the most.
Help me.
But it's just it's quite possibly the worst way to do anything, but it's also in that context the only way to do anything. So you're kind of doomed to suffer there. The committee work tends to work best if you know exactly what it is that you need to be doing, like the exact design. This is you can see this in standardization work, like on the W3C, that when they are taking something that's already been implemented by web browsers, and they're just defining and clarifying the core, like the edge cases, and making sure that everybody throws the same error at the same time, they can work really well. But again, looking at the W3C, when they've been designing their standards from scratch before implementation, it's been a disaster every single time. It just, XHTML2, for example, it just never went anywhere. Like, loads of interesting ideas, but...
Well, it's all never, very interesting.
Yeah, but never went anywhere. The same thing, that when you get back to open source projects, there you basically have two options. You can either go really, really slow and do things by committee and make sure everybody is on board and there's a consensus. And
can I say something here? I actually disagree with you quite passionately.
Okay, go on.
I think this argument of committee is used as a bit of a red herring, because there obviously is a lot of truth to it, but that's why we have representative democracy in a lot of areas. Basically, you can have a committee, but you just make sure there's one person or small team that actually runs things, and and you just have a committee, just like in a balanced public company, you have a CEO. You have a chief financial officer, but you have a steering committee, and that committee are not involved in the day-to-day running of the business. That is not their purpose. Their purpose is outside, or should be. Obviously, this fails in a lot of... but a true steering committee should be of people that have the experience and the credos and the ability to stand up to a CEO or some of the other individuals if they're doing something blatantly wrong or damage the company medium to long term. I don't see anything different in a open source project where you have a steering committee, but you give people 4 or 5 years to actually run it. I see it as a completely red herring, this argument, in some ways.
I mean, it depends on how, like you talk specifically about a steering committee, and It depends on where in the process the committee lies, where in the process the sort of group collaborative decision making resides. When it's a problem, like I was describing earlier, that usually means that the committee is right there on some vital crossroads, deciding things where it probably shouldn't, and where it probably should be on a higher level, deciding direction and strategy rather than the individual actions. That's probably one way of making a distinction between the two. But the problem in open source is that, generally speaking, open source is managed by whoever shows up.
Yes.
So it's like making sure that there are specific roles and specific hierarchies and specific structures can be a lot of work to make sure, both make sure it's in place and make sure that people are actually following it. Because sometimes
they can't be done for free, basically.
Yeah. It's work. It costs money. That costs money means you need a parent organization of some sort, and you need a revenue model. It needs to, somebody needs to be profiting from the whole endeavor. The answer would then seem to be that it can be done, but it's very tricky. It can easily go wrong. But specifically to what Kurt mentioned, in that it having a single contact point, having something that coordinates is vital, no matter what model you use. Is that especially with outside work? Is that outsiders can't, people who stand outside an organization can't be expected to navigate the internal structure of the organization to be able to collaborate with. And that applies both with corporations and with open source organizations. You need some coordination point, somebody who takes care of, then takes that matter internally and passes on.
It's called proper governance and structure, isn't it?
Not all companies have that, and not all open source companies have that.
No. The other thing, it's on our list, the other thing that I've been accused of it and other people is that if you don't contribute to core or one of the Asiri projects around WordPress, that you haven't got the right to say anything about it. I think that's absolute shit myself. Basically, and it's another technique. I'm very passionate about WordPress and I want the best for it, but I'm not working for Matt Bownwick for free. I'm just not going to do it. Not when he wants to move, in my opinion, from the example of number three to the example of number two. And some people would say it's getting to the stage where it's in version one you showed, but I don't think that would be fair. I definitely, in my opinion, it's moving to example two in the first half of this interview that you so clearly outlined. I'm just not prepared. Doesn't mean I'm not passionate and I don't want the best for WordPress, but I'm just not going to contribute. And I think asking individuals to contribute a lot of time to something like that, or even companies where you have no real structure, is pushing it a bit. What would your response be?
One of my early jobs out of college was at a fairly traditional software company that had, back in those days, had an actual department just for testing. And they were amazing at their job. They had such a talent for finding and pointing out problems that it was just awe-inspiring. But they had no talent in fixing it because that's not their job. The ability to spot a problem, describe it, and describe what needs to be done is not the so the same as the ability to actually do it. Those are two separate skills. So as soon as you shut down critics for not contributing, you are basically shutting off one of the most important sources of information a project can have. Because people have expertise that's relevant for finding and discovering problems that need fixing, but they wouldn't have the first clue on actually how to do the fixing, because that's a different skill. So I think it's extremely short-sighted to demand. To basically, it's just a tactic to shut down criticism because you don't want to do the work, in my opinion.
I'm going to throw it over again to, I think we're on question four, Kurt.
Yeah. And that one is not just in community or governance or those things, but in WordPress as a whole. When you think of WordPress as a whole environment, what do you think are the most, both sides, what are the most significant challenges, but also what are the most significant opportunities that we see in the space in 2024?
I mean, one of the most interesting opportunity would be the changes in the social media landscape, both in terms of two different open and federated protocols appearing, Blue Sky and the ActivityPub or Mastodon. So WordPress doesn't really is its own thing, but it's so frequently has to interact or integrate with other social media platforms. I think it has a huge opportunity there to figure out new ways of integrating with these social media platforms that weren't possible with the closed ones. So you can actually change completely the equation for how somebody's e-commerce site or a company's website interacts with their social media presence on these platforms. I think that's a very, very interesting opportunity that there's a lot of potential innovation there and untested ideas that could be tried out. So there's people in the WordPress community already and trying things out. So I think that's a big opportunity. The challenge is basically... everything else, the world. Just look at this state of the world. I don't even need to go into any specifics. It's just so many things that are just because it's like you need to exist in the world. You need to exist in the community and with your local government and your local economy. And if everything around you is having problems, then that's going to be a problem for you. So I think that. But I think that you could say probably that challenge is probably applies to all of us everywhere and no matter what we're doing. So that's not specific to WordPress. But I think a specific challenge to WordPress is to figure out why, does it want to become the CMS monopoly or oligopoly on the web? Is that a good thing? Would WordPress be improved by actually focusing on deliberately having a smaller market share and serving a smaller market better instead of this ambition of just constantly becoming a bigger and bigger share of the web? I think that's that question. Figuring out an answer to that question, because I don't think anybody's consciously thought should we dial down the market share. But I think that question is probably the biggest challenge that's specific to the WordPress project. It's like, is it too big? Is it already too big? Does it need to be smaller for everybody involved? I don't know.
I've kind of got a follow-up question in this, and it's more about global perspectives, because Jonathan and I are captured here in the United States, and there's a lot of feel that WordPress is a United States product. I mean, there's just no getting around that, right? And a lot of the community that tries to drive the influence is here in the United States. But when I speak to people that I work with overseas, they seem completely disconnected from some of the nonsense that's a distraction over here in the States. What do you think is your perception of WordPress as an American product versus WordPress as a global product? Is that even a fair question?
I think it is. For example, I go to Iceland. Is a very there's a lot of family oriented activities. Like our idea of the close family is probably closer to the Mediterranean one, where it's like distant aunts and uncles and cousins. So we do a lot of family gatherings and meetups with quite a large amount, a large number of people. And then whenever I talk about working on the web, the invariably people mention WordPress. That's like, that's their, like, if anybody has worked at on an institution or organization or company that has a marketing presence on the net, it's probably WordPress. And there, that's their, it's their entry point into the back end of the web, of how the web functions. And like you say, I don't think the US or the English language communities issues in WordPress, I think that registers with those groups and those users much, if at all. They complain about some of the consequences, like Gutenberg. If you speak to somebody who works in marketing and has been forced to switch to Gutenberg and they don't like it, they will talk about it ad infinitum. Which is not exactly fun when you're at somebody's 70th birthday party and trying to get distracted and not thinking about work, and then you meet somebody, a relative or a cousin, who just talks about WordPress all the time. So, there is definitely this sort of, especially with global source project, this sort of decentralized nature means that each country, each language, tends to have see a different slice of the overall community. I think that's probably a good thing, but there is the sense that, like, if you speak to Icelandic users of WordPress, most of them will say they have no control over the project. They don't feel they have a voice anywhere that can reach or influence any of the decision making the project. So they both feel disconnected from the drama. So they probably don't even know about the drama or the politics, but they also feel disconnected from the decision making and the overall strategy. So it's a bit of a, like, six of one, half a dozen of the other situation.
Nice. Thank you so much for the feedback. Jonathan, I'm going to toss it to you, and I've got to run to my other call.
Yes. Kirk's got to go off to the previous. Follow-up question. I think all, everything we've discussed during this podcast is, I've used this term a few times, a kind of witch's brew, but the catalyst is the Gutenberg project. And we're almost 6 years into it. It has only 200 with full site editing themes, a figure that I was exposed. It still only has about 200,000 active. If that is not classified as a failure, I really don't know how you could classify that. I wanted it to, I'm still very pro Gutenberg, the actual idea, because WordPress really, to be effective, it really needed to improve the editor experience, and just relying on third party solutions totally, I didn't feel was appropriate. I publicised it through Twitter. I was watching a quick video from Paul from WP Tux, who's not an enormous lover of Gutenberg, but he's a very fair and honest individual in my experience. And he did a review of the upcoming update. And when you look at the UX, the usability and UX of native Gutenberg, in my opinion, it's a dog's breath. It's getting worse, and this is only my opinion. The reason why it's getting worse is they're not really dealing with the UX and usability, or the usability and UX mess they've got, and they're adding more and more functionality with every update, and it's making the usability and UX flaws even worse because they're adding even more complexity to it. So the situation on that side, and their argument, and one of the arguments used is the reason why the usability, actually using the interface and the UX design, is really quite, in my opinion, quite crummy, is it's an open source project. I refute that completely. I think it's a load of horseshit myself. What's your views of what I've just outlined?
I think blaming the nature of the project, open source, saying that it's the nature of the project's fault that they might not have good user experiences. I mean, it doesn't make sense even on the face of it because of how centrally controlled Gutenberg specifically is. It's not managed like an open source project. It's centrally managed. So they should easily be able to bypass, if that were true, because I don't accept that as true to begin with. But even if that were true, that this was always a problem with open source projects, Gutenberg is specifically structured to be able to bypass that problem. They should be able to design a cohesive, thought-out experience for the editing interface because of they are this separate cluster of a project that is much smaller and should be easier to manage for this specifically. But it's like, I think it's clear to say that Gutenberg works for fewer people than it's supposed to. I think that's a diplomatic way of saying it. And if it was supposed to work for everybody who uses WordPress, then it's obviously a failure because it doesn't. It just plain doesn't work for everybody who needs to use WordPress. And even like in some of the integrations I've worked on, it's caused problems because of the opaque relationship between the editing user interface and the actual HTML that's output. It tends to has, in some cases, made a few integrations a bit more complicated than they would have otherwise. And I think it's solvable, but it makes things more complicated. And as soon as things are more complicated, like you say, they tend to be harder to use. They tend to be more error prone. There tends to be more that goes wrong. The sad fact is that this was probably avoidable if it had been properly managed from the start. It was a bit of a missed opportunity. This could have been a much, much bigger deal, like bigger positive deal than it was.
You might disagree with the way they're running things, and there might be some personality clashes. You know, some people really hate my guts. It doesn't really bother me. It doesn't really bother me that much. Not because I'm a sociopath. I just accept I'm not everybody's cup of tea. You know, it doesn't make them terrible. And there's other people that I think are total sociopaths. You know, so I'm not much bothered what a sociopath thinks of me. But these people aren't idiots that are running this project. They're much sharper people than me. I'm just an average guy. They're much brighter than me. They must be aware of the UX and usability problems, because when you watch that video from Paul, it's a sad state of affairs, really. Why can't we get to grips with it? Or is it that they don't need, they're so much in the bubble, they don't even realize it is a problem?
It might be like, it's possible that the answer is different for every single one of them. But one common thing I've encountered is the fact that the extremely smart programmer types, they tend to find complexity easy to manage and navigate. And so they don't experience, there's a class of user experience problems that they aren't sensitive to, because they like that isn't a problem. I just need to do that. And it's fine. It's like, how is that? That's hard. And so sometimes the people being smart can actually work against them. Smart people have different needs. Like, not smart, but like people who have specific cognitive skill sets of being able to reason about specific kinds of problems. They have different needs from user interfaces from people who have a different kind of training. So I think that coders specifically are a very, very bad benchmark for they themselves generally are not able to see most user experience problems because they just have a completely different way of thinking about how they use their software tools than like 90% of the population. So they probably don't feel that. They probably don't see these problems to the same extent as everybody else does.
Yeah, I'm really surmising this, and I have no facts to support this, but do you think it's also Matt and some of the key people in Automattic, they have a kind of programming background. Do you think that their real focus is on the quality of the development team, and they totally, it might be not consciously, but subconsciously, totally, I'm struggling for the right word, because reduced in the value of UX and usability in the actual project, there's a kind of blind spot there to some degree.
I don't know. I mean, it's very hard to kind of like guess at people's motivations, or you can only just look at what they do, and it's obvious that what WordPress has been doing with Gutenberg is not putting the same priority on user experience as you'd think was sensible for that, for the project.
It's a contradiction, isn't it? Even by utilizing his and his team, his key members of his team, public statements, because they want this all embracing. So you think usability, if you match it to the public statements, you think that would be a core. But when you look at the end product, there's a total mismatch, isn't it?
I think it might be that they simply don't have the skill set, because UX design is not just you. Actually, quite often you need a level of, if you want to recruit world-class designers, you sometimes, it's not, one of the things that makes it easier to recruit world-class designers is having some design skill yourself, to be able to spot when somebody actually is likely to be good contribution versus bad. So then it might be a like employment issue, a talent issue. They just might not have the people on board that are capable of doing it.
I think you're totally spot on there, but we can only make guesses. We don't know, do we? Are you okay to go on for the next two questions, or do you have to call it a day?
No, I still have some stamina left.
All right. So how do you, I utilize AI. I've got a little bit of dyslexia. I found AI to be really useful in my business processes. I've been utilizing a lot of technology for over a year now. But also the other side of me thinks it's totally blown out of all proportions. But in the end, it will be like the internet, making the enormous change. So I oscillate like all these technologies. But when you look at them, there's always a load. There's real change, and there's just waffle, isn't there? It comes with it always. But how do you see AI? Where we're going to be in a year's time or 18 months? Do you think it's going to be in a very similar scenario with improvements? But or do you think there's going to be a quantum move in the next year or 18 months?
So I actually wrote a book on the business risks of generative AI last year.
Well, that's why
I could talk for hours.
Yeah,
The short version is that irrespective of the technology, and you can debate the technology itself back and forth, the companies involved are fundamentally dishonest, like OpenAI. I mean this in like an absolute dead serious. These are some of the history involved of the with the people in this field as a general is very dubious. You have research papers that are resurrecting concepts like phrenology of being able to detect whether somebody's criminal based on the shape of their head. You have...
Well, like, I'm doomed then, aren't I?
Yeah, all of us. And then you have the fact that quite a few of the people involved were very deep into crypto coins and like what looks from the outside as just entirely fraudulent behavior. So when I say that
obviously you're based in Iceland, so you're okay, but you need to say in my opinion.
Oh yeah. This like, in my opinion, based on like the outside perspective, looking at the things for like without knowing what's going on in people's mind.
Very important two words in my, three words in my opinion.
But the risk there is that the first one is that we don't actually know whether the technology is working as well as claimed, because all of these companies they're both run by people who used to be involved in CryptoCoin, and whether that in your mind automatically associates them with fraud and criminal behavior. That depends on you, but I know that there's some association out there that are involved in that. Goes for pretty much all of these companies. We can't entirely trust either them, their decision, or the data that they're releasing. So we don't actually know. Like with the release of GPT-4, OpenAI made all sorts of claims about what this technology was capable of doing, but they didn't give anybody access to the data needed to replicate those findings. Then later, when people manually replicated those findings later on, it turned out they had overstated the capabilities of the model for those specific tests by like 100%. They were like, the performance was literally half of what they claimed. So the caveat here is that I think that no matter what the technology is capable of doing, it's going to be doomed by the fact that the people involved are not to be trusted. They are running horrible companies in horrible ways and doing horrible things.
I just want to you utilize the word doomed. That's
I mean, it's going to be... It's a financial bubble currently. Oh, wow. And the bubble is going to burst. And whenever a financial bubble bursts, it's going to take out a ton of companies with it. So we can't rely on
any... The present argument is that the large companies will be able to reduce their work, the amount of people that work, they will be able to...
Not if they want to do the same thing they're doing today. Like, these are not... Like, these are tools that are very... It can be, under specific circumstances, very useful to increase people's productivity in specific ways. Yeah. But they don't act... Like, the productivity gain in most studies is something on the order of, like, 10 to 20 to 30%, depending on how synthetic the task itself, like, depending on how isolated the task can be from other parts of the project. Like a 10% gain does not let a company lay off 10% of their staff. So the layoffs that are taking place are completely unhinged. They are completely disconnected from any reality of what this technology is delivering. And that's another risk, is that they're acting on the absolute best case speculative effort of what the technology might be able to do in 5 years, but they're doing the layoffs today. And that is, you know, that actually is an existential risk for these companies. There's a there's a non-zero chance that these companies might be cutting to the bone and actually killing the organization and setting off into a terminal decline, where they take a profitable company and turning into a loss-making one within the space of 2-3 years. So there's the disconnect here is massive between what the company is doing and what the technology enables. And that worries me. It worries me a lot.
Oh, well,
there you go. Last question. If you had your own time machine, H.G. Wells, or your watcher, Doctor Who, and you've got your own TARDIS, and you could go back to the beginnings of your career, and, it doesn't have to be something enormous, because we all challenge, don't we, during our career. And some of us don't, which is very sad. But if you could have, just one little tidbit you could tell yourself or some little hint, what is anything come to mind that you, if you could go back into your early self at the beginning of your career that you wish you knew there?
Don't bother with learning macromedia director. It's a complete waste of time.
When I was doing my degree as a mature student, the head of the department had a thing about director. And he was director. And
so much time I wasted on that. And then it turned out to be completely worthless.
He loves it.
With the lingo, the programming language, it was completely non-deterministic. You could have the same piece of code, copy and paste it into a different project, doing the same thing, and it would break in the other project. There was no discernible reason. It was just the worst development ever. And
had a life of its own, didn't it? Literally,
yeah. But it turned out it wasn't as lucrative as I thought it would be. When I started learning, and it's like, yeah, this is going to be good for the occasional paying the bills and doing some CD-ROMs. And it turns out CD-ROMs just disappeared overnight, and that that turned out to be not a thing. Waste of time. So yeah, that would be my advice to myself. Don't bother with Macromedia Director, and put an upper limit on how much time you're going to invest in Flash as well, because that's not going to
Actions, that's how I got into the web. I was one of these terrible action developer types. I did, but it was a hobby. I had another business, and I did my degree part time, because I was the only person in my family that's ever done a degree. So far, my nephews and nieces have done degrees there. But the guy that was running my course, he was a maniac anyway. Absolutely. He didn't like me. I was a mature student. I was running a business with almost 30 people working for me. And he started coming out of his bullshit. And I wasn't going to have it. So he loved me, didn't he? There we go. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I think it's been a great show. I really, really enjoyed it. What's the best way for people to find out more about you and your ideas?
Just my website, balderbjarnason.com. If you manage to, through some miracle, get the spelling right, you should find me. Don't just Google the name. There's a risk you might actually find the Icelandic footballer, Baldur Bjarnason. There's 13 of us with my name. So I'm usually at the top of the search engine results. Not always. Depends on whether he's made a business deal. He went into a restaurateur after he quit football. So I occasionally, by accident, get his emails where somebody just assumes that Baldur
Dawson. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Right, we might go there. If the base of my experience of UK football, that could be quite educated in some way. Sorry, that's English humour. I will make sure that the link is in the show notes, folks. The notes will go up first thing next week. All the links will be there, folks. Thank you for supporting the show, folks. We're getting more listeners and viewers. To help the show, maybe you could share it on your popular social media platforms, and that will get more people joining us. We will be back next week with a WP Tonic Roundtable show We've got Jason Cohn, the founder of WP Engine, is what part of the panel. It should be a really interesting. Jason is always a fantastic guest. We will be back soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.